From Mark chapter 10, the account of blind Bartimaeus receiving his sight. Then they came to Jericho. As Jesus and his disciples, together with a large crowd, were leaving the city, a blind man, Bartimaeus, was sitting by the roadside begging. When he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to shout, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me." Many rebuked him and told him to be quiet. But he shouted all the more, "Son of David, have mercy on me." Jesus stopped and said, "Call him." So they called to the blind man, "Cheer up, on your feet, he's calling you." Throwing his cloak aside, he jumped to his feet and came to Jesus. "What do you want me to do for you?" Jesus asked him. The blind man said, "Rabbi, I want to see." "Go," said Jesus, "your faith has healed you." Immediately he received his sight and followed Jesus along the road.
Thanks, Lawrence. Oh, I can breathe now. That's one of those things that you end up doing that is you never quite know how it's going to go. He was brilliant. Thank you for that. So this morning, I just want us to look on the theme of following on from that passage that Lawrence just read for us this morning about the idea of open my eyes. I don't know about you, but I'm one of those people that suffers from this strange disease called object blindness, that I can go into a room in the house and I'm looking for something and it's my keys, it's my phone, it's my wallet, it's my glasses, whatever it is, and I just can't find it anywhere. And then Joanna, bless her, comes into the room and just goes, But also, over the years, my eyes have been opened in many different ways. And I just want to share a little story with you, and you may have heard this before. I've had the privilege over the years to go to different parts of the world and go on what we call mission as part of the visa teams that we do, the volunteers in service abroad teams we do as part of this church and as part of the Free Methodist churches in this country and also around the world. And many times the whole question of value and what do I actually value and how do I value those things and why do I value those things often is brought into question when you're in a different part of the world and you're seeing things that often you take for granted that other people don't necessarily have the same. And this one particular occasion, in 2001, we got the opportunity to work with a team from America in Ukraine, which is in Europe. And we were based in a city called Rivne, which is in the west of Ukraine. And we were teaching English to Ukrainian school kids. And the thing I learned very quickly is their English was actually far better than mine. They were actually saying words to me, and I'm like, just bear with me a second, let me find a dictionary. I don't actually know what that word in English means, which got a little bit embarrassing. But and just their level of understanding and education was just incredible. And yet they had so little out there. And on one particular day, we were invited to go out to visit an orphanage out in the countryside. And so a team of us went, and the Americans had been prepared for this more than we had. And what they had done in their church, in their community before they came over, is they got everyone to collect together any McDonald's Happy Meal toy they ever had in their home. And then they created this big suitcase that they brought with them to the orphanage. And their plan was to give every child in the orphanage a toy. And it was a great idea, because when we got to the orphanage and you actually see the level of poverty in that place, that there wasn't a single bed that any child slept on that had a mattress. It was literally the wire mesh, and if they were lucky, a blanket. And if they were really lucky, a pillow as well. And I'm stood there with the rest of them, and we're stood holding these cheap plastic, pretty tacky toys, thinking, is this the best we've got to give them? And yet, for them, it was like Christmas. A lot of them didn't have any toys. And so this queue of children is in front of us, and we're handing them out. And I'm one of those people that kind of assesses what we're doing as we're doing it, and I'm starting to count heads, and I'm starting to look at how many toys we've got left. And pretty quickly, it gets to the point where there's a realization there's one more child than the number of toys we have. And I'm stood there going, what are we going to do with this one? Has anybody got anything we could possibly give this child as a toy? And the best we could come up with is one of the other girls said, I've got some peach-scented hand cream. And I'm like, that's got to be one of the world's worst toys to give a child next to a Happy Meal toy. And so this one little girl is left, and everybody else is off playing with their whatever it was they were playing with. And I think it was down to me to hand over and almost apologetically go, there you go. And the look on her eyes just lit up, because what she then did, she flipped the lid, she squirted it in her hands, took a deep breath in, and a big smile came over her face. And she rubbed her hands together and went and found another child and rubbed her hands on that child's hand, then squirted some more in and ran and found another child and rubbed their hands and then sniffed their hands and literally pushed the child's hands into their own face to get them to smell. And just literally for 10, 15 minutes was just running round. And the fragrance of peach filled that courtyard, that I suddenly had my eyes opened, that so often we value what we think is so important and so big and so grand, and sometimes it's those little things that we take for granted, like a peach hand soap, that to a child who has never received a gift is like the entire world to them. And what struck me as well, she didn't want to just keep it to herself. She wanted everyone to experience that as well. Or to look at it a different way. Who remembers a few years ago where this stuff was so valuable? Because we all in this area had to do without fresh water for a while. And what an absolute pain that was. And for the few months after, I don't know about you, but this was one of the most precious things on the planet. And yet today, just a few years down the line, I don't think twice about turning my tap on and receiving fresh water. What do we take for granted? What do we actually value? How do we measure what we value? When it comes to a person, how do we value people? How do you measure what somebody is worth? By how much they earn, how famous they are, what they've accomplished with their life. In this passage that Lawrence has just read, we hear of a man who sat by the side of the road on the way out from Jericho to Jerusalem, who's identified as Bartimaeus, the son of Timaeus. Now, many times in the course of history, if you're blind, if you're a beggar, if you're lame, or you're a leper, you're simply known by that title. You're not known by your name. And it makes me wonder, why is he named and recognized? Maybe it's because what happens as we go through this story, we actually see there's a value in knowing his name, because it helps people identify who it was that had this encounter with Jesus. But often these people are seen to have no value. And also Bartimaeus, so we know, can't see. He can't see Jesus, but he's clearly heard about him. And that's important, because often we don't focus on what we do have, we focus on the don'ts. So for example, the illustration works better if I do this. Do you see a glass half full or a glass half empty? Do you compare yourself to others by what they may have that you don't, or by what you do have and they don't? Because often you can go, well, I don't have, I don't do. I just wish I could. And maybe for you this morning, what you might need to do is actually change your focus. To start off with, actually change the way you see things around you. As I mentioned before, I've had encounters where it's often those simple little things of seeing a child with a peach hand cream to make me realize that actually in my life, I have a lot more do's than a lot more don'ts. So maybe for you this morning, you need to think on what you actually do have. Yes, Bartimaeus couldn't see. There was no way he could actually get through that crowd. Personally, I don't like crowds. I have an advantage over most of you is that I can see over most crowds. At 6'8", I can see where I need to get to. My problem is there's a whole lot of heads in the way. And at times I am tempted. I wish I was like Paul Rowe, who was given the message before, stood here muscle butt, that I could just pick every single one of them or throw them out of the way just so I can get to where I need to get to. But I don't have big muscles. You can't have everything. He's always wanted to be tall, so there you go. We can't have everything. But maybe what he did have was he could hear. He had heard about this Jesus, and he's now hearing that he's coming towards him. And he's also got a voice. So he's used his hearing and he's going to use his voice. And so he shouts out, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me." And maybe for you this morning, it's the key thing for you is don't focus so much on what you don't have that you forget what you do have. Don't let the don'ts outweigh those do's. Don't let comparison with others force you into being someone that is actually silent, that is actually just sitting there doing nothing. Because each of us has some form of gift or talent, whether you believe it or not. The Apostle Paul writes in Romans 12, "We have different gifts according to the grace given to each of us. If your gift is prophesying, then prophesy in accordance with your faith. If it's serving, then serve. If it's teaching, then teach. If it's to encourage, then give encouragement. If it's giving, then give generously. If it's to lead, do it diligently. If it's to show mercy, do it cheerfully." You see, I think the fact of the matter is that Paul is writing that each and every one of us in some way has gifts or talents that are different to other people. You have do's. You can say of yourself, "I do have." Don't worry about what you don't have. And that's what's the beauty of being part of this church. It was demonstrated this last weekend on the Family Fun Day. So many of you got involved in many different ways. Not everybody could be here, but people have been telling me we were able to pray because that's all we could do. And I'm like, that's brilliant. But we all have different parts to play in this thing known as the body of the Christ, of the church. Different gifts, different talents, different resources that God can use and works together to form a beautiful tapestry of his work through his people to bring him glory and to help others around us. So what we see in this story is that Jesus is on his way to Jerusalem. He's on a mission, literally, to complete his task here on earth. He's heading for the Passover, the celebration of the Passover feast. And this would be the last meal that he would have, subsequently known in the Bible as the Last Supper, that he would have before he's betrayed by one of his very own, Judas. And then he gets arrested, and then he gets beaten, and then ultimately he gets crucified. That's where he's heading. He knows where he's heading, but just for a moment, for one moment, he redirects one of his steps to answer the cry of a blind beggar by the side of the road. A man who, for whatever reason, may have been abandoned by his family, may have just been seen as someone of no value. Because what we see is Bartimaeus sees this opportunity like no other. And for you, there may be opportunities that pass by you that may come to you. And maybe for you today, it's a time not to worry about what you don't have, but to seize the moment that God sets before you right now. To seize that opportunity and say, like Bartimaeus, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me." And it's interesting, isn't it? Because the crowd, some of whom are Jesus' disciples, who have heard all the stories, the story of the Good Samaritan, how you're meant to look out for people, how you're meant to love one another, they're all standing around Bartimaeus and saying, "Shut up, keep quiet. He's going that way. He hasn't got time for you." They criticize him. So does he just sit there and go, "Okay"? No, he shouts even louder, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me." And Jesus hears him and says, "Call him." And I love this moment, because in this moment, those who have been trying to get him to shut up are now the ones who have to say to Bartimaeus, "Jesus wants you. Jesus is calling you. On your feet." And so Bartimaeus jumps up, he throws his cloak off, probably where he's had a lot of his identity over the years, and he goes towards Jesus. And Jesus asks a question. "What do you want me to do for you?" Now, when you first hear that question, you go, Jesus, isn't it obvious? You've got a guy who's blind in front of you. Or is Jesus actually searching for the truth? Because I don't know about you, but if Jesus was stood right before me, asking me the question, "What do you want me to do for you?" If Jesus stood right in front of you this morning and asked you that question, what would your answer be? Now, we can think on different levels in terms of our answer. We can think, okay, let's go for the standard beauty pageant answer. "Oh, we want world peace." No, no, no. "What do you want me to do for you?" It's a personal question. Now, I've had a lot more time to think about the answer to this than I'm giving you now. And there might be something in your mind right now. And I've been chewing on this all week. Kind of like, you know, you get a good juicy bit of meat that you're chewing on in a meal, and it's just a good juice and you're chewing away. And they end up with a bit of gristle and you're just chewing away in it. And I've been chewing on this question and chewing. And obviously, if you're not a meat eater here today, then let's think about a big chewy chunk of fudge or toffee. And you just can't get it. And it's just sticking and you just can't get through it. I got to a point, because I came up with loads of different answers, and time and again, God's going, "Nah, that's not it." That actually, what's really needed is the one thing that Jesus was on his way to do. That he actually is the greatest answer, Jesus himself. That he actually was to become the perfect sacrifice for all the stuff that I've done that separates me from God, all the stuff I've thought, I've said, but not just for me, but for you as well. That he stood and asked that question, Jesus already knew what the answer was. It was him. But there's an issue for Bartimaeus to get over first. But ultimately, Jesus was here because we have all in some way separated ourselves from God. And Jesus came that we might be made right. We might be made whole, be in a relationship with God. And when we are made right with God, when we have fellowship with God like that, and we can walk and talk to God and be made right and whole in Him, it actually changes everything else. It changes our focus. It changes the way we view ourselves and our friends and our family and the world around us. And that's what makes all the difference. Everything else fits in behind that. The one thing that is needed as the answer to all of the things that we think we need from Jesus is Him. Because in Him, you can be renewed. You can be made different from the inside out. He can change you into who you are actually made to be, so that you can parent differently, so that you can love others differently, so that you can help restore others and build relationship with others like never before. Because all of a sudden, you're not focused on me and my needs and my things, but you're focused on loving the way that God and Christ love us and sacrificially give of themselves to us. It changes everything. But what we see Bartimaeus saying is, he goes, "Rabbi, I want to see." That word in its original translation is Rabboni, which means my master, my teacher. Here's a man who's never probably met Jesus before, who's been sat on the side of the road, and instantly he's talking to Jesus as if he's someone in authority over him. Previously he'd said, "Jesus, son of David," and that was just a national kind of savior title. This time it's different. It's personal. The only other time this term is used in this way is when Mary Magdalene meets the risen Jesus outside the empty tomb. She too says, "Rabboni, my master." It's personal. It's about relationship, not just about doing or saying the right things. It's about giving Jesus the power and authority over your own life. And you know, perhaps Bartimaeus, even in his blind state, could see better than many of the crowd and many of us today, where he says, "My master, my teacher, my savior, I want to see." And I think it's when you understand who you are in Christ and what you can be through him that your sense of value comes from not what other people say about you, not what the crowd may think of you, not what they may shout out at you, but it comes from the value of the one who knows you better than you know yourself. So for some of us today, maybe our eyes need to be opened and to say to Jesus, "I need you. I simply need you in my home, in my relationships, in my workplace, in my friends, wherever it may be. That my sight, my vision may be restored so I see others the way you see them, Jesus. And that maybe for you, you say, I need your forgiveness today because I've been blinded by other people's opinions of me, or the world's view of other people." So Jesus then says, "Go, your faith has healed you." And I love this because quite a few times when Jesus does something for someone, he tells them to go, and they do the exact opposite, because Bartimaeus actually turns and he follows Jesus on the road, on the way to Jerusalem. But the amazing thing is that as his eyes are opened, the first thing he sees is Jesus. it's Jesus. And then he joins him on his journey to Jerusalem. And I wonder whether Bartimaeus was stood with the crowd on that day when they crucified Jesus. What a week of being able to see the beauty around him, to then see the horror of the cross, of the one that had given him back his sight, dying for him and for you and for me. See, Jesus had a mission that involved all humanity, but he valued the one. And maybe today you need to hear that you are valuable because you were worth the price of Christ's sacrifice on the cross for you and for me, so that you and I could be made right with God. Maybe today your eyes may be opened to who you were created to be rather than blinded by what others tell you you should be. The Apostle Paul writes in Ephesians chapter 1, a prayer that is for the church then, but I also think for us here today, that he prays for the people. He says, I pray that the eyes of your heart may be enlightened in order that you may know the hope to which he has called you, the riches of his glorious inheritance in his holy people, and his incomparably great power for us who believe. That power is the same as the mighty strength he exerted when he raised Christ from the dead and seated him at the right hand in the heavenly realms, far above all rule and authority, power and dominion, and every name that is invoked, not only in the present age, but also in the one to come. The same power that conquered the grave can live in you and live in me. Will you open your eyes to that possibility this morning? God bless you.